Okay, part two now is the company they keep, Soho News. Joe Pennington and Stanley Pinsley. I'll share with you what they have in this one article and interpret some of it as I go along. They begin by saying there's hostility between the Justice Department and the Central Intelligence Agency. There always has. They said it began with feuds of J. Edgar Hoover not wanting the OSS into his turf, and when the OSS became the CIA, the Justice and the CIA struggled over domestic and international covert operations. In 1978, the Senator Church Committee began investigating CIA activities in the United States in connection with Justice Department activities overlapping the organized crime syndicate of drug smuggling and gun running. And, of course, a lot of the syndicate figures like John Rosselli, Sam Giancana, and Sandus Trafficana, Carlos Marcello, came up when the House Select Committee on Assassinations began to scratch the surface of who killed John Kennedy. And again, you had the marriage of the CIA and the Justice Department, Robert Mayhew of the FBI, Mayhew, an agent of the CIA and counterintelligence, hiring people from organized crime to set up assassination teams. The Justice Department, the CIA, and organized crime have a strong marriage that hasn't divorced yet, and there's conflicts about whose turf. They conflict with each other sometimes, but they've had this going, and it started to be exposed in 1978. Now, the FBI is not all corrupt, and the CIA is not all corrupt. So private investigators on their own began to open up pieces of information or evidence, allegedly looking for crime figures, and they started an operation called Operation Gateway. The FBI started it, and they looked for leads between people of the syndicate and persons associated with the CIA. Well, you know, the CIA, that wouldn't go for that too long, even though Senator Church was going into this. They found links of the CIA with the mob, and the Justice Department found them, and the CIA pretended they would want to halt them. Keep in mind, of course, that in 1978, the CIA and the Justice want to halt the mob, and the CIA is running a bank of $55 million to $1 billion over in Australia of heroin and cocaine and gun running on their own. It'd be hard for the FBI to crack that one, but that's what the CIA was doing. Well, Operation Gateway started into 14 different states based in Washington, D.C., and one of the areas they went, East St. Louis. Six federal agencies were working with the FBI. There was the FBI, Drug Enforcement, Internal Revenue, Federal Aviation, U.S. Customs, and Treasury Department, and all six were active in Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Michigan. Operation Gateway was a cause of concern, according to these authors, to the intelligence community. Well, Navy intelligence, Army intelligence, and the Defense Department are into dope and drug dealing, so of course Operation Gateway was a cause of concern to them because, as they said, it pointed to white-collar criminal underworld that has a tangential and possibly substantial connection to men who were former CIA agents, professed covert agents, and drug enforcement agencies. And that, again, tangles down to those areas like the Nugenhand, the Wells Fargo, Jonestown, Mark David Chapman, William Colby, and that gang. When they went looking for trouble, they found former agents, present agents, and current drug enforcement agents. Operation Gateway was an undercover operation, and they were going to arrest and convict members of a group called The Company, which is a slang term for the CIA, but they called themselves The Company, and they had a lie detector test to screen people out. It's a very high, complicated organization with computers and so forth. Members of The Company are a huge drug arms smuggling conspiracy with ties of elements to the intelligence community. That's what they found out with Operation Gateway. They had special province to investigate the criminal operations, and what they found was that not only was the CIA working with members of organized crime such as like the Nugenhand, the heroin cocaine, the Air America in Southeast Asia, the Flying Tigers, the narcotics traffic coming in from Southeast Asia and also from the Golden Triangle, but they saw the movement of arms and weapons and secret electronic components. They weren't not only making money from selling guns and from selling narcotics, but they were selling electronic components all over the world to foreign governments. Now, that links in later with Frank Turple and Edwin Wilson, The stories about their operations began to break in the New York Times. Those were the Seymour Hersh articles, and also Jeff Gerth and Philip Talman. And according to the Soho News, these stories read like pages from the Gateway Report. Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel got media exposure unparalleled so far with CIA operations and CIA covert operations. But so far, we've only heard about what they did in Uganda or in Libya. And we have not had the details of where they operated from 1960 through the 1970s. And that's important. How long did they work for the CIA? Edwin Wilson worked Navy intelligence, allegedly through 1976, but he was active in Nugenhand with the assassination teams in Australia after that. Turpel allegedly left in 1971, according to the CIA. But these authors have talked to Frank Turpel on the telephone doing this story, and he said he's worked up through this last April 1981. And, of course, at the time of Watergate, those were ex-CIA people who were on the payroll of CIA at the time. The CIA denies their role of the agency with what is known as the company, but nevertheless, the evidence of the Justice Department makes it very clear by their reports that the company and the CIA and the drug connections and the assassination teams all fit together, are one and the same. The indictment for Turpel and Wilson was in April 79 in Washington, D.C. for sending explosives to Libya, shipped from California. An indictment for Turpel and Corcola for selling machine guns, silencers, and ammunition in New York City. Turpel, Wilson, and Corcola are now in the Middle East. They live in Beirut, Lebanon, and in Tripoli, Libya, and they're also in England. They're active at the present time with the PLO. They train PLO terrorists and technicians. They send special force agents there, and they purchase American equipment, which is easily sent by the CIA for them. And this article briefly mentions Billy Carter, Robert Vesco, and Frank Turpel working together. And in January 81, they said that Turpel was an intermediary for Gaddafi, and they wanted Billy Carter to help deliver those eight C-130 air transports that Gaddafi wanted. They were parked in Atlanta, Georgia, as I said, but he got them from other people, including Neil Burke, who then went to Western Airlines and is active trying to manage Western Airlines at the present time. Frank Turpel has been talking with these authors in the article and said that he's been involved in shady deals and that the deals were commonplace in the CIA. And as I say, they've been exposing their activity. And while they were active in the CIA, again, I have to remind you, George Bush was director of the CIA during these time periods, 1976-1977. This article says the most tantalizing part about Operation Gateway and the CIA are their ties to activities not called the company, because the company until now, or hopefully the CIA thought, people would separate the company from the CIA. The company, they say, is the nickname for the CIA. The company has been defined as a multi-million dollar criminal enterprise, some of the largest drug smuggler operations in the United States by way of Colombia and other South American nations. Details of the company have not yet appeared on the national news, and that's why I said that the Jenrette story, Congressman Jenrette and Robert Vesco and the links of them to the company are supposed to be the largest narcotic operations going in the world today, or at least until they became visible by the exposures. The company, according to Operation Gateway, specializes in cocaine, marijuana, produces synthetic drugs. Their primary activity is the extensive exchange of guns and weapons, which they obtain in the United States, American military bases, which we pay for with our taxes and pay the guards to guard, and then they send them away in exchange for South American drugs, which come back that they sell at their profit. They operate on the East Coast, all along the southern states, and in the Midwest. They use voice and polygraph stress tests to test the members of their loyalty in the company. And they become associated with 30 legitimate businesses in the United States, including electronic and food industries. Now, this is what happened with IG Farben after World War II, setting up 750 companies. You can't expose IG Farben. You can't expose these legitimate companies because they would go broke now and go under. So they have a vested interest once they bought into the system. So the company is now involved with at least 30, in quotes, legitimate businesses, And anybody who talks gets the threat of murder from the company people. They have the means for gun running, drugs, and the CIA, and they threaten to kill. Frank Turple was in the CIA, as I say, until April 1981. He told these authors he's familiar with the company, but he can't talk about the relationship of the CIA and company, and he can't go into details. Now, the first indictments of Operation Gateway after the Justice Department went on them were in St. Louis, Missouri. They were handed down November 1980. It involved $50 million worth of drugs coming through there, and 11 individuals were named. They were all clients of the company. Then another man named Marvin Zylstra, Z-Y-L-S-T-R-A, or his nickname Starvin' Marvin, was one of the leaders of the company. His home base is Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and he was indicted for sabotaging the fuel system of an airline, leading to the death of a drug enforcement informer. That reminds me of the Air Florida going down to Florida, and the system was clogged, and they can't find out why part of that plane was clogged, so that what the pilots read was not accurate, in fact, what they were supposed to be seeing when they took off. Well, this team, the company and the CIA, out of Florida, had a man who was an expertise at sabotaging planes, and they also worked, these teams, with destroying other planes and blowing them up and heading assassination teams. That's no trick. So this Starvin' Marvin, or Marvin Zylstra, was arrested for and convicted April 25th, 1981, for operating large-scale drug smuggling operation and for sabotaging the fuel system of an airline in Florida. Robert Snyder of Lexington, Kentucky, another of the 11 company members, was indicted for racketeering and criminal enterprises, and he's known as a prominent polygraph expert. There are indictments in Florida, St. Louis, some were picked up in Illinois. Representative John Jenrette has an assistant aide, John R. Etheridge. Etheridge is another man who was implicated in the company. Jenrette only briefly was mentioned in his relationship to Robert Vesco and narcotics traffic. And this aide, John Etheridge, was a former aide to Jenrette. Jenrette was convicted in the abs scam story. And one of the biggest stories yet is to take Frank Turple and Vesco and Richard Allen and the whole team out of the Libya connections and the Japanese connections and put them with the syndicate and the crime connections that fit together with William Casey of the CIA and the people that are in the White House today, the Reagans, and their organized crime friends from California and Beverly Hills. Now, 40 more indictments are due against company members soon, and I would say lots of luck, because if there's 40 indictments, imagine how much they're going to talk. Now, this article goes into a guy named Jamil Alexander Chagra, C-H-A-G-R-A. He's one of the heads of the company, and Operation Gateway discovered that Chagra was one of the big regional wholesale dealers, and he got convicted for selling drugs for the company, and he is one of the main leaders of the company. But the same Chagra, who's been dealing with the known as the company, the group that stole from China Lake, that worked with Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple, he works with the Central Intelligence Agency, and he also operated out of the Nugan Hand Bank in Australia. Chagra has worked with the Australian Connections and the Australian Narcotics Bureau, said that he was associated with the Nugan Hand Bank in Australia, an institution tied totally to the CIA, to CIA money and agents. It seems to me that several years ago, when we were talking about Nugan Hand Bank, I went into this on the air, but the company linked to the CIA, that they're one of the same, and Chagra and the assassination teams linked to Nugan Hand, and it involves the money in Australia that allegedly was missing. Nobody's claimed it, but it's so tied up with narcotics traffic that I'm sure it's been removed from the country and been used to buy off people in this country since the Nugan Hand Bank fell. Nugan Hand Bank had the shadiest dealings, according to this author, and Chagra was involved in the bank. Their dealings were such that they were investigated in mid-1979, going back to 79, following allegations that that bank was instrumental in facilitating an operation to skim money from Las Vegas casinos for U.S. organized crime boss Joe Banana. Now, this is the first article I've seen linking the casino skimming to the crime organized figures and Joe Banana out of California. And he also works out of Nevada, but Joe Banana's headquarters in California. An investigator for the Australian Narcotic Bureau has revealed that Chegra's name surfaced repeatedly in connection with alleged skimming schemes coming out of Vegas. And as I said before, I believed that the Wells Fargo story broke, that $200 to $300 million that's missing, the $80,000 a week that was offered to Harold Smith coming out of Nigeria. I believe that the reason the Wells Fargo story broke and they had to make a patsy out of Harold Smith was that when the feds went into investigating the Nugenhan Bank, he would lead right to Beverly Hills, the Wells Fargo Bank, and to Caesar's Palace and Frank Sinatra and Ronald Reagan and the mob about Reagan. And I said that the Nugenhan story and the Wells Fargo story could be a Reagan gate if it were followed properly, just like Richard Nixon would have been out much, much earlier if we went into Murray Chotiner and the organized crimes of the B.B. Rabeaus and the Howard Hughes and the mob connections to Richard Nixon. You might have even avoided the Vietnam War if you'd done your homework and saved all those lives and time and money and divisiveness and energy. Now, I believe that, the way that some of these missing millions and billions began to be explained in the Justice Department, as they went to search for this money, they would tap these crime forces, and that they would, the banks would transfer from one bank to another to cover their bases so they wouldn't be investigated. But going to Australia and looking into the Nugenhan, which they had to do because 12 people died shortly after the bank collapsed, and one was John Paisley of Navy Intelligence and the National Security Council, who had worked in that department with Lee Harvey Oswald and in the Soviet Union, and Bernard Fensterwald, the attorney for Mrs. James McCord of the CIA, the attorney who had the committee to investigate assassinations, became Mrs. Paisley's attorney. This was kill money that was being set up, as it had been earlier before the Dallas years, at another bank, the Republic National Bank in Texas, and other banks around the country. The Nugenhan had a lot of kill money for destabilizing countries, and they also mixed it with the crime and mob money. So in investigating the Nugenhan Bank, they came to the skimming money in Vegas, which gets awfully close to home because Paul Laxalt, who was he's now a senator of Nevada, he was the governor when the Howard Hughes gang and the syndicate were all very close there. I mean, he's one of the ruling people of the Nevada establishment. He ran the campaign for Ronald Reagan, and he's in the Senate, you know, being the appeaser of the Senate between the White House. He's the man who sits right next to Ronald Reagan, who the Hughes syndicate people chose to be a president someday. So out of that state, out of that skimming money, where Paul Laxalt comes, it's going down to Nugenhan. And I knew there'd be that full cycle of Nugenhan to Beverly Hills to Vegas, and this article has it. The article says the CIA, drugs, and espionage activities took place at the Nugenhan Bank. Some of their bank members and persons had CIA connections, and this has been publicly documented. And following the disappearance of two of its founders, who were Americans, Frank Nugen murder and the disappearance of Michael Hand and the murder of John Paisley, the Justice Department had to go into it. Now, this is what this article is saying. The bank's underworld ties have not yet been publicly documented. They've talked about CIA heroin and the connections in London Times and the New York Post and so forth, but it hasn't yet come out, the skimming Vegas connections to the Nugenhan Bank. Both the CIA and the organization known as the Company have significant ties to the Nugenhan Bank. This is the Soho News. The Australian bank employers admit to officials of the Australian Narcotic Bureau that the bank's clients included drug dealers, gun runners, and the CIA. The Nugenhan Bank was used for numerous arms deals, and this was for Edwin Wilson, Frank Turpel, Navy intelligence, and money was sent down for the military junta that killed Salvador Allende. That was one of their lovelier murders. Now, Chagra, a member of the criminal underworld, who's been implicated as a company conduit, has also ties to the Nugenhan Bank in Australia and ties to the Central Intelligence Agency and to gun running and to the stealing of weapons out of arsenals. Now, as far as the deaths, the assassinations, and murders that follow when misinformation comes out, the agent who began to investigate the company, who began the first work for the FBI, was a man named Sante Alessandro Barrio. He was following Jimmy Chagra in 1978. He was arrested by the Drug Enforcement Agency and put in San Antonio jail, where he died from a John Belushi piece of food. They called it a peanut butter sandwich. He was in a coma 3 months, and he died. He was the federal agent, narcotics agent, who became a federal narcotics agent in 69. He was promoted to the station section chief in Mexico City. He did the brilliant work of putting together the links of the company, the CIA, and what was going down in Australia, the Nugan Bank. He wrote a report called Operation Croupier. And when he called the federal agents together to tell them that he had put together Jimmy Chagra and all these interconnecting links, you can imagine how thrilled the Justice Department and the CIA were that this man did this work. So he was murdered. He had a meeting. He called people together in September 1978, and in August, rather, in Mexico City. And a month after the meeting, he was arrested, and he was murdered on this particular sandwich. He took one bite, threw it in the toilet. Minutes later, he dropped on the ground in convulsions. He died a few months later in a coma. His wife said that he had been poisoned, that there was strychnine, and so forth. He had a similar demise as Mama Cass, Jimi Hendrix, and John Belushi. Then along came the federal judge who was to prosecute Chagra on the narcotics dealing and connections, but the Drug Enforcement Agency, the FBI, and the Justice Department had them linked to a much bigger operation, and Judge Wood was attacked and murdered. A U.S. attorney assisting Judge Wood was almost killed November 21st, 1978. He was going to prosecute Chagra for narcotics trafficking. He's got a new identity, James Kerr. He's left the state of Texas. He wasn't killed, but he's not recognized, and he doesn't work for the federal government anymore. Judge Wood was attacked and murdered as he was leaving his home, and people linked to that murder, charged with that murder, have not yet been prosecuted. It's been 33 months, and they're about ready to go into the murder of Judge Wood. He was killed May 29th, 1979, and that's the anniversary of my birthday and Kennedy's birthday, May 29th, Judge Wood. And it's been 33 months, and they haven't had the nerve to prosecute the people for killing him. Now, they brought in, this is a really great one, they brought in Mr. Lowell Jensen from Washington, D.C. This is 33 months after Judge Wood was murdered, and they had all the names and information earlier. But the Washington Department decided to take over the case of this murder of the judge, and the reason they did was because it's so large and so controversial. So who did they bring in? Mr. Lowell Jensen, the Assistant Attorney General of the Criminal Division. I mentioned Lowell Jensen in 1981, February 22nd, a year ago, on this program. D.A. Jensen is to get a high Justice Department post. He is a man from Alameda County, I mentioned, involved in covering up the SLA, the real story of the SLA, the free speech movement, the Berkeley demonstrations. He worked with Edwin Meese III and Ronald Reagan with Operation Chaos, the COINTEL program. He's now is going to be Assistant U.S. Attorney General in charge of the criminal division. So what you get is the fox prosecuting and guarding the chickens. I said a year ago that Jensen was trouble, and Washington has sent him out there to find out who should be indicted in the Judge Wood case and what the charges will be. This is February 28, 1982, Washington Post. They're still wondering, the New York Times, they're wondering what should Mr. Jensen do, how far should they go into the murder of Judge Wood, because these guys may be killed off who, if they're held for the murder, they may talk and be killed off. And the deaths compile to a point where they can't keep killing every witness, and eventually this story is going to come out. Now, on August the 6th, 1978, Mr. Barrio, the federal drug agent, made the links of the company, the CIA, the Nugan Bank, and the skimming money. And in September, he was arrested by the drug enforcement, and then he died. This is in 1978. In September 15th of 78, John Hart of the House Select Committee was talking about John Paisley and Lee Harvey Oswald, And 1 week later, John Paisley, who had direct contact with the Guggenheim Bank in 1978, went off his ship and died, and a CIA attorney is representing his wife. As I say, that was a mystery linked to the Kennedy assassination, the House Select Committee, the Guggenheim, and again, Navy intelligence, gun-running assassination teams. November 18th, 1978, Leo Ryan went down to Jonestown to investigate what was going on because there was CIA activity and gun-running, narcotics traffic, and of course he and 923 other people were killed, and I believe that properly investigated the money for the original Jonestown will go right back to Guggenheim. May 29th, 1979, Judge Wood was murdered. And January 27th, 1980, Frank Nugent was murdered, and Michael Hand took the powder. Now, there was an arrest January the 5th, 1980, just before Frank Nugent died, a man named Bradley Bryant, who carried with him the connecting link of the company, the CIA. He was arrested, the China Lake robberies, and he was a man who had a security service who was picked up on a fluke. He was arrested, and on his person, he had the information that connect the Guggenheim, the CIA, the company, and Bryant worked for Chagra, he worked for the CIA, and with him was a lot of equipment that was stolen and sophisticated equipment and records of the China Lake robbery for Navy intelligence, including classified image-enhancing rifle night scopes, sophisticated telephone scrambling devices. This is what Bradley Bryant had when the New York police arrested him January the 5th, 1980. This is at the Sheraton Hotel in Philadelphia. He had equipment taken from the naval base in California. He had pistol silencers, commando-style daggers, ski masks, false identification papers, bogus gun permits from several states, links of his activity to Navy intelligence, and this fluke arrest in Philadelphia set off again January the 5th, 1980 is when this arrest took place, and then it was right after that, the arrest, January 27th, that Frank Nugent was murdered in Australia. Now, this one article, I didn't have time to go into several others I wanted to bring up this evening, but we'll do it next week. This one article is very important because there were a continuous series of deaths of Frank Nugent, John Paisley, Judge Wood, and a lot more. I have many files of deaths related to this case, but it's important because people working for the intelligence community are not supposed to be working in the United States in the first place. They're not supposed to be a Gestapo in the United States, and that's what the CIA is. It is that. They're supposed to protect us from foreign spies, and they take valuable equipment, assassination teams, silencers, telescopes, rockets, airplane transports, and send them to people who are supposed to be our enemy, but they're arming them to the hilt, such as Gaddafi, the PLO, Idi Amin before he was kicked out, but around other countries. They are transporting airplanes, jeeps. They go to North Carolina and take the special forces and take American soldiers to train these people. And the media is trying to identify for us who are our enemies and who are our friends, while the intelligence community is arming the people that they're telling us are our enemies. In truth, the only enemy they seem to think they have is the Soviet Union. But the intelligence community is stealing out of the armories. They are passing weapons on. They trade weapons for narcotics. They can kill judges, private citizens, anyone that stands in their way. They are a combination of the intelligence community, the Justice Department that's covered all of this up. Every time they go to investigate it, they kill the investigators and poison them with the food, the strychnine, and so forth. They blow up planes. That's why I think they can have access to Air Florida if they want to get Mr. Williams or anybody else or Mr. Tirado, George Bush's buddy. There's people from Fairchild. The point is that there are articles now, and there'll be more, and books, hopefully, showing the mess that this country is in by these people, paid salaries to protect, who are throwing things out the window that are locked up, selling them, taking the money, bringing narcotics into this country, selling the narcotics, gun running, no morals, no hold on them, no Justice Department, No police force stopping them. They have had carte blanche of almost every agency, and they've been doing this for a long time. This article and that one Wall Street Journal on the Air Florida, I think, are very interesting, and we'll do the other things we didn't have time for this week. We never do have enough time, but the hour is up. So I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, and you take care of yourself.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.
This is for all you headbangers out there.
KLRB Carmel.
You know who you are.